three cancers, three scans that were ordered for something else. One number that connects all of them is 3 years. Not 3 years of new treatment, but 3 years of warning. And warning, it turns out, is a much more complicated gift than it sounds. Start with a disease that has never given anyone a warning. Pancreatic cancer is a, you know, one that traditionally is caught late, you know, almost by design. The organ sits deep, the early symptoms, they're vague or absent. And by the time a scan goes looking, the five-year survival number is one of the worst in oncology. Most pancreatic cancer is found because something else brought that patient to imaging in the first place. You know, it can be a stomach ache, a fall, an unrelated workup that, you know, just happened to include the abdomen. That accident is timing is being engineered on purpose. You know, a model trained at the Mayo Clinic reads routine abdominal CT scans. And, you know, the ones ordered for something else entirely and finds pancreatic cancer, you know, up to 3 years before a clinician would have had any reason to look for it. It isn't reading for a mass, though. You know, masses, of course, show up late. It's reading texture, density, subtle tissue, you know, changes across thousands of pixels that never cross a human threshold of concern. You know, it's because the eye, though, is never built to hold that much statistical pattern at once. The model is trained on retrospective scans, patients whose outcomes were already known, matched backward against imaging that they had years before the diagnosis. It isn't guessing. It's remembering a pattern the rest of medicine hadn't named yet. So I'm Dr. Alan Badeau, and this is AI Today. Welcome to the show. And if you have any guesses, you can have a good idea of what we're going to talk about this week. And that's looking at different types of cancers and AI's ability to predict them. Now, let's move over to the kidney, something I know very well. The story changes shape, but not its core. In Estonia, a diagnostic tool called BMV, you know, BM Vision, it reads contrast, enhanced CT scans across, you know, the phases radiologists already use. It's looking for renal lesions. It's the way, you know, these renal lesions have always actually been found. And it's usually by accident on a scan ordered for something unrelated. Sound familiar? Radiologists call these, you know, incidentalomas. It's not an easy word to say. I had to even write it down. I still had a hard time. And there are a lot of them. Renal cell carcinoma isn't rare. It's just not. Roughly 400,000 new cases a year worldwide. An overwhelming majority are still caught the old way. Incidentally, or late, or both. In a study of six radiologists reading 200 scans, the tool cut detection and reporting time by roughly a third without missing what radiologists caught on their own. Now, that's not replacing the radiologist, right? That's giving the radiologist back the time the incidental findings used to steal. In prostate cancer, that runs through a different door. Radiologists have used a standardized scoring system for years to decide, you know, from MRI alone, whether a lesion is worth a biopsy, a system that lived entirely in trained human judgment, you know, read and read and read after read and case after case. You know, Cleveland Clinic's their tool doesn't override that judgment. It runs the read first, flags the highest suspicion regions, and then hands the radiologist a head start on the same decisions that they're always going to make. The biopsy still happens, and or, you know, or maybe it doesn't happen, right? Because, you know, the person decides, but it gives the person the ability to decide faster. on a scan that's already been triaged. Now, that's important, right? Because you're looking at time to decision, time to treatment, not waiting, having the ability to get after it a little bit earlier. Three different cancers, three different organs, three different algorithms trained by three different institutions that never coordinated with each other and arrived independently at the same conclusion. The pattern is there long before the symptom is. Now, that sentence sounds like a, you know, the end of a hard problem, right? We wish. It's actually the beginning of a different one, though. Finding the disease earlier was never part of cancer care that was broken. What happens in the years after the findings, that's the part nobody built an algorithm to fix. Because that part was never a technical problem to begin with. So we're going to deep dive into this. We're going to look at it from a lot of different angles. We'll add some perspective, some personal perspective to it. And we'll see if we can give some folks some guidance. So stay with us. This is Alan Badeau with AI Today. We'll be right back after a few messages from our sponsors. Hi, I'm Dr. Badeau, and this is AI Today, and welcome back to the show. Here's the part, the press release, they generally leave out. A three-year warning is only worth something if what comes after it, the specialist, the imaging, the biopsy, the treatment plan, is something a person can actually reach, or, you know, it's on a timeline that matters without going broke to get there. Detection got faster. Nothing about access moved at all. Now, let's start with the money part because the money is where this gets honest really fast, okay? At stage one diagnoses and stage four diagnoses, of course, they're not the same disease, not medically and not financially either. Early treatment's cheaper, it's shorter, and dramatically more survivable than late treatment. Early detection is supposed to be the intervention that saves the system money by saving it time. And in theory, the math works. That's great, right? In practice, the machine didn't remove the toll booth on the way to treatment. It just moved the toll booth 3 years earlier. And save some time. Earlier in their insurance year. Earlier in their ability to have a deductible. Earlier than the moment most people have budgeted for a health crisis at all. Preventative screening is dollar by dollar the cheapest intervention in the entire system. It's also the first thing a high deductible health plan makes a person hesitate over. Because a scan that catches something incidental doesn't come pre-approved for what happens next. The follow-up MRI, the urology referral, the biopsy, the medicine, the pain, each one is a new authorization form, except the pain. A new copay. A new judgment call about whether this month's budget has room for a disease nobody has felt yet. or managed or budgeted for time-wise. And there's a second toll booth, and it's quieter than the first one. These tools don't exist everywhere at once. The Mayo Clinic has this model. The Cleveland Clinic has this model. The hospital 40 minutes outside of a major metro area has a different one. The one without a research affiliation or a radiology department large enough to pilot experimental software, for goodness sakes. Early detection AI is rolling out the way most medical innovations roll out. Academic centers first, flagship hospitals second. Everywhere else, well, could be years. Or maybe not at all. The three-year head start, it's real, okay? Unfortunately, not everybody hits that. And so whether a given patient gets to use it depends less on their biology and in some cases more on their zip code. Or in other cases, it can just be bad timing. Now, financial toxicity and the terms oncologists actually use for this, the fact that a cancer diagnosis now predicts bankruptcy risks almost as reliably as it predicts a treatment protocol. Move detection 3 years earlier and financial toxicity doesn't go away. It just starts the clock 3 years earlier on a person who has three more years of premiums, deductibles, lost income ahead of them before the disease was ever supposed to even announce itself. Now, here's the version of the story that doesn't make the press release. 3 years head start, fair number of those years get spent arguing with a portal about whether the follow-up scan counts as medical necessity. That's not hypothetical. You know, it's not framed for an effect. That argument already has its name, right? It's a docket number. It's a plaintiff. It's something else. And we're going to talk about that more in the next segment. But what we've seen over the years is that as these new detection capabilities become more prevalent and we see significant advances in, you know, just the treatment plans that come along with that, we also have seen expenses, of course, skyrocket. And it leaves a lot of folks without a lifeline in some cases. And that's not talking about, you know, folks that are, and people that are going through these things themselves. That's talking about, you know, folks that have families and jobs that impact or employees or those kind of things. There's a high price that cannot be put on a spreadsheet. The time, the pain, everything else associated with that. And then when you start to pile on the insurance hoops that one has to go through, the financial difficulties that some folks have to go through, it starts to bring things into perspective that, you know, it's great that these things are being found 3 years earlier, but that's only great for some folks. It's not great for everybody. It creates unnecessary hardship in some cases. And, you know, that urgency, that hope of survival, or that hope of following the correct treatment plan, is sometimes being manipulated, being maneuvered by somebody at the end of the phone that is not your doctor, and they're making judgments about your treatment plan and whether it's medically necessary. I mean, I've heard many times talking about, you know, couples that have gotten a divorce. So the one couple can, or the one partner can file for bankruptcy on their own and not burden the entire family. Or, you know, there are situations like that taking place. And I think folks have forgotten that, like many other things with AI, it's great that we can detect things early. It's great that treatment plans can be customized and developed. But the system is not ready for that. It's not ready to be able to handle the financial implications of that. And all those flow down, of course, to the folks that are paying the deductibles and everything else. And then they expect to be covered, and somebody says, no, that's not covered. And I think it's like with many things with AI, you know, it's not the replacement of doctors. It's not the replacement of, you know, the judgment that comes along with that, that's the issue. It's the replacement of somebody that's got, in some cases, a little bit of common sense. In some cases, it's, you know, a heart. You know, they used to say, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a lifetime of support, right? But that 3 years, in some cases, is maybe not worth it to some folks. And that's a hard thing to grapple with. And as you look at that and you think about it, yeah, I mean, AI is doing some wonderful things. It's making sure that it's being used on both ends, though. Help the patient, not look for ways to not support them. And so we're going to deep dive into that. It's very personal for me. We're going to talk about that. Like I said, the argument's got a name. It's a docket number, and it's got a plaintiff. We're going to talk about that next. So this is AI Today. Thanks for watching with us. We'll be back after a few messages from our sponsors. Welcome back to AI Today. I'm your host, Dr. Alan Bedeau, and you know, we're talking about cancers and AI's ability to predict them and really using different AI technologies across the board. Now, the hospital's AI is built to find disease sooner, right? The insurer's AI is built to decide whether finding it counts. Nobody's designed those two systems to talk to each other, and that was not an oversight. That was a choice made by two industries with two different definitions of what a false negative actually costs. So you start with a claim that's already in a federal court, okay? So a class action in Minnesota alleges that UnitedHealthcare used an algorithm to override the judgment of treating physicians on a Medicare Advantage claim, denying post-acute and nursing care the plaintiff's own doctors had ordered. Based on a model, the complaint says carried roughly a 90% error rate on appeal. In February of this year, the federal judge in the District of Minnesota declined to dismiss the case. that means the court has already found that allegation credible enough to answer. Now, it's not proven, but it's credible enough to answer in front of a jury under discovery. Now, the numbers, though, around the lawsuit, they're not an outlier. The AMA, American Medical Association, surveyed 1,000 practicing physicians in 2024 and found 61% concerned that AI is directly increasing prior authorization denials. 93% said that the delays it causes translates to delayed care. 94% said it correlates with worse clinical outcomes. And 75% said denials have climbed over the past 5 years. The same 5 years, those tools went from pilot programs to standard infrastructure. 2 in 5 physicians, physician practices now employ staff whose entire job is fighting these determinations. The average physician spends 13 hours a week on prior authorization paperwork. 13 hours a week. That's not overhead. That's a second part-time job created entirely by a system built to move faster. And it's not confined to Medicare Advantage anymore, right? In 2024, 84% of large health insurers across 16 states were already using AI in some form of utilization review. Reporting on other major insurers has described automated systems that process claims in bulk. In some documented cases, spending on the other order of a single claim per denial goes out, no clinician's name attached to the decision. And starting this year, the federal government has its own pilot, right? The WISER model. And that's begun bringing AI-assisted prior authorization to traditional Medicare itself across 6 states for services flagged as vulnerable or wastes or fraud. Traditional Medicare was the fraction that never looked like Medicare Advantage. Now that gap is being closed. Now there are some good things about that as well, because, you know, I used to do some work for, you know, CMS and those systems, and there is some fraud that takes place in there. Now, you can't catch all of it, but even some of it that you can catch and repurpose can be used for other things. So don't think that this is all bad. There are some good things that can come out of these, as long as they're used the right way. Now, some insurers facing that pressure, though, they have shifted toward what industry is calling, it's really a scrubbing platform. And, you know, the AI doesn't issue the denial itself, right? It flags the claim and routes it to a person who signs off. Now, that sounds like a fix, but read the pledge more carefully, and it applies only to denials the insurer itself classifies as clinical. Administrative denials, the ones with a missing code, a mismatched modifier, a technicality in how a diagnosis was entered, never reaches the clinician's desk at all under this framework. So this scrub is real. It's also narrower than the headline, you know, talks about it. Now, this specific tool behind the Minnesota litigation, you know, it's got a name we're saying out loud because it's important. And it's Navi Health's NH Predict. It's built to estimate how many days of post-acute skilled nursing care a Medicare Advantage patient should need after a hospital stay. Yep. Families describe watching a discharge date arrive on a predicated calendar. Their own physicians never have signed off on. That case is not an isolated system anymore either, and it's not an isolated dispute. It sits alongside congressional inquiries, a stack of similar class actions against other carriers, you know, and according to different, you know, sources of medical information, you know, hospital systems and physician networks have begun dropping specific Medicare Advantage plans entirely, rather than keep fighting the algorithm plan by plan, patient by patient. Insurers, though, for their part, they argue that these tools are a decision support system and they're not the decision makers. That a human review remains in the loop. That the model only accelerates a process that was already going to happen. Now, United Health has denied the allegations in the Minnesota case outright, right? The defense is worth taking seriously, not dismissing. The unresolved question a jury will evaluate is around trying to answer whether a human touched the file or not. That's not the point. It's whether 13 seconds of touching a file that an algorithm already scored counts as individualized review the policy has promised when it was sold. Now, does that sound familiar? We talked about that last week. One model was trained to see a tumor in the human eye, and oftentimes it would miss, right? And others have been trained on claims. Both of them get filed under the same phrase in a press release: clinical decision support. Only one has ever met the patient. The other has only ever met the claim. A handful of states have started drawing the line, though, and it's really about time in some cases. Arizona, California, Texas, and Maryland are really leading the charge, and they're doing some great things around now requiring a licensed physician to review any AI-generated adverse determinations before it can stand. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like what the European Union is trying to do? Sure does. And actually, I agree with it in this case. It's not a ban on the technology. It's an admission that somewhere in this system, a human being has to be willing to sign their name to the word no. The question this segment keeps circling is why that requirement doesn't already exist everywhere an algorithm does. Doesn't make any sense. We have seen this before. We've talked about this before. You know, Deactivated asks what meaningful human involvement means when a company the size of Uber pays out 825 million euros for not having enough of it under EU law. This is the same question. Just ask in a different industry. Wearing a hospital gown instead of a delivery app. And this time, though, meaningful human involvement isn't missing from a firing. It's missing from whether the biopsy the machine just found for a reason gets to happen at all. And so, do you want the 3 years or no? Hold both halves of this segment in view at once, okay? A hospital's algorithm spent months learning to see a shadow no radiologist has ever been able to see or been trained to name. An insurer's algorithm spent that same window learning to see a modifier code worth denying in under 2 seconds. Both projects call themselves innovation. Only one, though, was really built to slow anything down. Yeah. So I want you to keep that in the back of your head. Think about that. We're going to go into break. We'll be back after a few messages from our sponsors. Welcome back to AI Today. I'm your host, Dr. Alan Badeau, and we've been talking about insurance companies and using AI and the fight between the clinician side of AI and the insurance side of AI. And we've talked about both. And, you know, there are good points in both and bad points about both, right? Now, in this last segment, we're going to talk about really what prevention actually costs. So screening intervals, risk-based imaging, genetic testing that flags a predisposition before a single symptom has ever shown up. Every one of those tools sits upstream of a diagnosis, and every one of them runs into the same word, used two completely different ways. One is preventative in a hospital's outreach materials that they'll hand you, and you know, you find it before it finds you type things, right? Preventative in a policy's coverage schedule means something much narrower, though, and considerably more negotiable. Those two documents are not describing the same list of services. And nobody knows what, you know, each one is going to come back with, right? And almost nobody discovers until the claim comes back denied. The Affordable Care Act does guarantee a specific set of preventative services at no cost sharing, though, right? It's a defined list and reviewed on a fixed schedule. Risk-based imaging built around what a new detection model can see, maybe what it can't see by default. You know, some of those are on that list. It becomes coverable the way most things become coverable, you know, in the system. After enough claims, after enough appeals, enough state legislature, you know, bickering, they finally decide that the gap's worth closing and, you know, they come up with some statute. Four states passed laws in 2025 alone restricting how payers can use AI to deny medical eligibility. That's real progress. And it's also an admission of exactly how far behind the coverage rules are. It's terrible, especially when it's relative to detection technology and AI and the algorithms that are constantly being released. Now, notice the shape of the legislative map, though, because it is important. You've got Arizona, California, Texas, Maryland. Each one arrived at the same requirement independently, the same way the Mayo and Cleveland clinics did, and a lab in Estonia arrived at, you know, independently early in their detection. When many separate systems converge on the same fix without coordinating, that's usually a sign of an underlying problem was never really in dispute. 200 more prior authorizations bills are moving throughout state houses right now. Most of them are chasing a moving target. A technology that gets faster every quarter, the law spends catching up to last year's version of it. It's not going to work. The math isn't going to be there. We talked about that. There's a wider frame here too, you know, and if you want it, it's important because the rule book and the race, you know, looked at how the EU AI Act treats algorithmic decisions that material affect someone's access to essential services. Healthcare is included in that as inherently a high risk subject to disclosure and human review requirement before deployment, not after a lawsuit forces the issue. The American approach so far, though, runs in the opposite direction. Deploy first, litigate the harm state by state, and let patchwork verdicts kind of function as the regulatory body. Neither model is right 100%, okay? I don't want anybody to think that. But only one of them asks the question before the denial letter goes out. That's clear. And it's very frustrating for a lot of folks. many folks who pay for things out of pocket, it does change the equation a little bit, make some things more feasible, more treatments, different trials, different areas, different research institutions. It allows some folks to really take advantage of that three-year head start. Unfortunately, it doesn't allow everybody to do that because maybe they don't have a three-year head start. You just never know. But think about it this way, where the show in each segment is trying to go to tonight. A three-year head start means nothing if the system on the other end is built structurally to make a person wait. That is not a flaw in the technology. Both systems are doing exactly what they were built to do. The hospital's model finds the disease. The insurance model finds the reason to slow it down. Neither one's malfunctioning. Neither one is even lying about what its purpose is. If you read the fine print, instead of the press release, that's part of the story that it's worth sitting down and reading. Because the uncomfortable version of this story isn't that AI is coming for healthcare. It's already there. And it's on both sides of the desk. It arrived without anyone deciding, though, on purpose, whether those two AIs are supposed to serve the same goal. One optimizes for the earliest possible true positive. The other optimizes for the lowest possible cost per claim. You put those in one sentence, and the sentence stops sounding like a technology story. It starts sounding like a budget document with a diagnosis code attached. Now, if you tie it back to where we started, three organs, three models, one shared discovery. The pattern was always there. Years before anyone had a reason to look. That discovery does not belong to the hospital that built it or the insurer that has to answer for what happens next. It belongs to the patient that, unfortunately, standing between those two systems. And they're holding a scan result 3 years ahead of a diagnosis that nobody has agreed to pay for. So the machine found it early. Whether that finding survives contact with the rest of the system, that part was never going to be decided by an algorithm. It's still entirely a human decision. It always has been. Now, 3 years would make a lot of people feel pretty comfortable that they have it. Because time is something we can't get back, right? We all know that. It's just the realities of if you don't have 3 years, if you don't have 3 months, you can't afford to be slowed down. You just can't. There's no time. And unfortunately, sometimes it's the final decision maker. Now, I can't say that 3 years for everything is as helpful as we've talked about. But generally, if you find it that early, you're in pretty good shape. Find it in 3 months, then the topic changes radically. And then every piece has to come together. you push and you push, you know, you go through the process and you just unfortunately have to hope that everything comes together just right. If it does, it's great. AI, whatever it is, humans. If it doesn't, we know the outcome. So, you know, everybody has been affected in some way by some sort of cancer diagnosis or disease. It's awful. We all know that. We all need to get on the same page, because that's the only way that we're going to solve it. So I'm Dr. Alan Badeau. As always, my clothing has been provided by Canali. I've worn their stuff for years. I love it. It fits fantastic. Feels great. And it just looks good. Now, it's always good to bring things home. And if you are interested in donating for cancer research, whatever that is, children's things, that's great. It's always worth it. So this has been AI Today. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next week.